Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Lux Sparks Peskovitz. Lux is a 14-year-old maker, musician, writer, retro gamer, pop culture historian, and collector of many things. Many, many things. And I know that for a fact because I've seen your collections, Lux. You also like dogs and naps. How are you doing, Lux?
I'm doing really well.
It's really great to have you here. And we're really looking forward to your cool picks.
Yeah. So Lux, you, like I said, you do collect a lot of things, cool stuff. So it's going to be really fun talking to you about some of the things that you collect. A lot of it's retro tech, but the first one is kind of a newer thing, and it's called a sushi bazooka. What is a sushi bazooka?
So I was looking for a sushi making kit because I had always wanted to try it out. And I found this on Amazon. I was like, what am I looking at? And I looked at it and I said, I have to get this. So basically what it is you stuff the rice inside it. It's like a tube, but you open it up. You stuff the rice inside it and then the ingredients in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And you close it up and you push it out with a stick. And then you're supposed to put it on the seaweed, of course, and roll it back up.
So when I think of a bazooka, I think of something that shoots across the room. It's not quite doing that, right?
It does not shoot sushi half a mile.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, man. All right. So what it does, though, but it looks like it may be something that helps you make sushi. If that's, I mean, normally you kind of roll it up in a little kind of a mat made of sticks. And this is an alternative to that, or this is something that helps you roll it up, or what's the purpose of it?
The purpose of it is to get all the ingredients inside the sushi besides the seaweed onto, you still use the mat, but you put the mix, like the rice with the ingredients in the middle, and you push it out onto the sushi in the seaweed, and you basically roll it from there, and it's super easy.
So it's like a dispenser.
Yes.
So it's an assist in making sushi.
Yes.
I mean, I was really hoping that you would shoot it into someone's mouth.
Yeah.
Like with those burrito cannons.
Little pieces, it would cut it off as it comes out into the right size.
So Lux, I noticed that this thing comes with a lot of like accessories, like little wooden spoons and this bamboo mat. And then what looks to be like a really sharp knife and some chopsticks. Is that knife like... Because the whole thing is like $30. It looks like you get an awful lot for that. Is the knife good quality?
Yeah, we use the knife when we make it, and it works fine. We've had no problems with it, and we haven't had to sharpen it or anything yet.
That's really
cool. So the whole thing is kind of like a sushi making kit.
Yes.
Overall, so you just have to supply the rice and other ingredients, and you've got everything, including five sets of chopsticks.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's so Lux, the you don't put the seaweed inside this red plastic tube, is that right? That stays on the bamboo mat, is that?
Yeah, that stays on the bamboo mat.
Okay. And so you put the rice and the filling, if it's tuna or whatever, in that tube, and then you press it and it comes out like in a cylinder shape onto the sushi? I mean onto the seaweed?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it's kind of like it's pre-rolling it to kind of give you a little edge up on making the roll of it on the suit with the nori, wrapping the nori around it. Okay.
That's cool. How did you find out about this?
I was just looking at sushi making supplies on Amazon because we just got a rice cooker.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which I love, but I was like, huh. And I was just looking on Amazon, seeing if there was like a kit or something to get started, and this was like the first thing that popped up.
That's cool. I might want to get one of these things.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, especially because sushi is so expensive and you can make it at home pretty inexpensively this way.
Yes, for sure.
That's good. All right, well, let's talk about, this is something that, I mean, you weren't even born when these were out. It's a Walkman.
Yes.
The Sony Walkman.
Yes.
We probably have listeners who don't know what a Walkman is. So tell us what it is and also why you like it.
Basically, it was the first real portable music player that you could take around with you and listen to stuff on the go. It uses audio cassettes. And it was pretty much the pre-iPod. And I mean, it sold a lot, and many, Sony originally introduced it, and they even sent like a prototype one, I think, into space, I'm pretty sure. But many different companies hopped on it, and basically when iPods came around, they kind of became old, defunct. Mm-hmm. But
this is this. So it's the early prototype of an iPod, and it used cassettes.
Right.
Yes.
And so what's the attraction to you as a person living in 2020 where you have, maybe you can fit, I don't know, 30 songs, 40 songs on a cassette or something at the best, maybe it's double-sided, and then you have to swap them. So is it just the fact that it is so much trouble to play music that makes it good, or what? Why? I'm trying to understand the attraction of it.
Okay. So when you have everything on your phone, say all the music you could want, that's cool. But you're never actually going to listen to all of it. You just won't, probably. And when you actually buy a cassette, say from some Bandcamp artist, you're going to listen to it a few times and you're going to say, hey, I really like this. And it's something you can hold in your hand and actually, you know, feel rather than just have a few MP3s on your phone.
So what you're finding is that you will listen to a particular set of music more often than you would normally if it was just buried in your phone list, because it's on a cassette in which you can pick up and play.
Yes.
Lux, I'm surprised that cassettes are even being made right now. So you're telling me not only can you buy blank cassettes, but that recording artists are issuing their albums on cassettes? Is that still happening?
Oh, absolutely. There is a bit of a resurgence in cassette, which is what happened to vinyl a few years ago. It's gotten to the point where Urban Outfitters sells cassettes with music on them. There's one remaining factory in the U.S., and these cassettes, like, say I'm getting, like, a super limited vaporwave release or something. I mean, they sell out fast. You know, people want them.
They're like collector's items.
Yeah, is the idea that you buy the issued releases versus buying the MP3 or digital download or finding it somewhere and then recording your own cassettes? Is that, I mean, do people still make playlists on it, or is that not cool enough?
You know, people don't really make that many playlists on cassette anymore, but there's still a lot of home dubbing happening. People go crazy when they like find cheap blank cassettes at the thrift store. And they record whatever they want onto them. They can put their music onto them. They can, you know, say an album that's like a $1,000 cassette, and they have the files online. I record it onto a cassette because I'll actually listen to it more.
I don't know how long ago. A couple of months ago, I probably threw away a bag full of cassettes because I thought, They're done. They're over. We'll never see this again.
It's like the analog.
I know.
Throwing out comic books or something.
I have a whole stack of blank CDs that I was going to throw out in the trash this week. Maybe I should hold on to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
I think so. Lux, I'm looking. So you can get like Sony cassettes a 5-pack for about $20. That seems pretty good. Do you actually have a brand of blank cassettes that you recommend, like that are good quality?
I just buy the Maxell ones off Amazon, the 90-minute ones.
Okay.
Those seem to work fine, but probably any will do.
Now, Lux, I remember you had like a little hack for these to make the cassette cartridges actually look a little bit cooler. Can you describe what it is that you do?
Oh, yeah. So this, I broke cassettes doing this, but it was a lot of fun doing it. Inside the cassette, they have these plastic tabs that tell you what brand it is and how long the cassette is and stuff like that. And what I like to do is I open the cassette up because the unrecorded cassettes that you can still buy have screws on them. So I open them up and you very carefully take that plastic sheet out and put it back together and then do the other side. And then it just looks like, I don't know, something the mafia would send you.
Like a ransom tape or something.
Yeah, like a ransom tape. Exactly.
Okay. All right. And what about the Walkmans themselves? Is the point of this exercise that you actually want to get a bona fide actual vintage Walkman, or are they're still making knockoffs and are they good enough these days?
The knockoffs are okay if you're just starting out. It's what I got. I got one from a record store, and then 2 days later, I found one at a flea market for $3, a real Walkman. And it wasn't like a fancy one. It was some like late 90s, early 2000s Sony one. They go for like $25 on eBay maybe. But, you know, I still use that today because I have a really nice Walkman. I got it for my birthday. Like top of the line, basically, like as good as Walkmans get. And I'm almost scared to use it because if I drop it, I don't want to damage it, you know, because I'm like, so I just got like a cheap one and I think you'll be set.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's cool. Lux, you picked the Walkman, and now you are going to talk about another retro portable thing called the Nintendo Game Boy. I think, again, it's something that came out before you were born. I mean, some people don't even know what it is. What is a Game Boy, and why do you like it?
So it's basically the first portable game system that really took off and made a difference. It was basically after Nintendo brought back video games from the dead in North America. And a few years later, they released the Game Boy, and they had a great lineup to go with it. They had Tetris, which, I mean, there's just an incredible story behind, and there's a great graphic novel about it called Games People Play Tetris. And, you know, escaping the Soviet Union and copyright issues with different companies and even involving murder. The story's incredible. And the game is so addicting because we're all basically perfectionists. It's just so addicting. I mean, who knows how many times I've played it.
And this is Tetris on the Nintendo Game Boy.
The Game Boy, yeah.
And so is playing Tetris on the Game Boy different than playing Tetris on another platform?
Yeah, I think so, because there's so many versions of Tetris. I mean, it's ridiculous. But this is the basic Tetris that people remember. People know how to play. There's no special moves or anything like that, or speed up. I mean there is speed up, but not like crazy Nazi stuff you just can't do anything with. It's the version people remember, and it's a lot of fun to play.
So Lux, I know that the Game Boy has come out in several different models. There was the original one, then there was one with a backlight, there's a color version. Do you have like all of them, or do you prefer like the standard first one, and have you done modifications? I know there's like a whole huge community around these vintage Game Boys. Tell me a little bit about like your collection.
So I have almost every model except the Micro and a Japan exclusive light. Not like all the color versions. I just have like one of every model, basically. You can mod them. I've tried it. It's tricky because you have to use a razor blade to take the polarizer film off the back with. I've tried it two times with two different handhelds, and both times the first time I ended up just twisting the ribbon cable, and that screwed it up. And the second time, I literally cut through the ribbon cable.
And what are you trying to do with the mod? What does the mod do if you're successful?
The mod basically gives it a backlight. And it looks amazing because it's something people were wanting when it originally released, because other handhelds at the time, they launched a little bit later because I saw Nintendo's doing great, like the Game Gear and the Lynx. People were saying, hey, why isn't there a backlight on this? And there was in Japan for like a version of the Game Boy Pocket, but with a backlight official. But those are hard. Those are expensive and can be hard to come by in nice shape. And the battery covers are like irreplaceable, which get lost all the time.
So I can see some of the attraction of a vintage Game Boy, Nintendo Game Boy, because it looks kind of cool and distinctive. Are you attracted to modern video games? Do you play current video games very much?
Oh yeah, I play my Switch all the time. I absolutely love it. But the reason I actually use my Game Boy a lot more is because, you know, I'm not afraid that if someone sees like a Game Boy carrying case, they're gonna, you know, maybe swipe it from the airport as opposed to, I don't know, a Switch case. And not only that, it's a lot of fun. The music is amazing to the point where there's whole communities about getting the soundtracks of old games on vinyl, and there's a whole market for bootleg game music on vinyl. The graphics are classic.
Bootleg game music on vinyl.
Yeah.
I'm trying to process that. The bootleg part is meaning that it's not there was music written for the Game Boy that wasn't ever put on the Game Boy. What does bootleg mean?
It means that Nintendo or whatever company's music it is didn't authorize it to be released on vinyl.
On vinyl, I see. It's legitimate Game Boy music. It just wasn't on vinyl.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Got it.
Yeah, the graphics are classic to the point where so many indie games nowadays, and even some mainstream ones, try to replicate it because everyone has such fond memories. And there's so many great games for the original Game Boy, you know, the original Pokemon games when it got introduced, Link's Awakening, which got a remake for the Switch, which is just, both are great. You can probably, like, say you got a Game Boy Pocket off eBay, $25-$30, and you got a copy of Link's Awakening, $50, you're going to spend hours on that. And it's just so much fun.
And when was the Game Boy released? I forget.
1989.
89, so 90. So that's 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So the stuff today in 30 years is going to be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that everybody kind of accepts today. So you should start saving all the things that people are throwing away right now today, because in 30 years, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Lux, I think I remember reading, or maybe you even telling me, that there are actually people who create games, new games, and somehow,
oh, absolutely.
And they put them on cartridges that fit into the Game Boy. Is that right?
Yeah, they put them on cartridges. There's, I think a few came out this year so far. People put them on cartridges. They still make cartridges mainly because the Pokemon games, because so many people want to play them, they make bootleg copies of the Pokemon games because people want to play them and they can get like 30, 40 bucks maybe. Because people want to play them. People just make rip-off cartridges. And they play, but sometimes they don't save because there's no internal battery in the cartridge and reasons like that. But they still get their games put onto cartridges. And there's even a software. I think it's called GB Studio, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
And you can design your own games for the Game Boy. And you can actually run it, say, on like an emulator, or if you have the tech, you can put it onto a cartridge. And it'll actually work, and it's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That is so cool.
You could probably also, in a Nintendo case, hide a full-fledged, you know, computer and run Call of Duty or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Emulators and all sorts of stuff.
Emulators, yeah.
In fact, I've seen like people selling things that look like Game Boys, and they have a color screen and an SD card that has like 20,000 titles from the earliest Game Boys up to like GameCube games on them.
Yeah, so the problem with those is a lot of them are made cheaply. None of them aren't licensed by Nintendo.
Right.
Or the other game companies, none of them. So all those games are pirated.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I've bought a couple of them and they're okay. I mean, there are very nice ones though, like this one called the Bit Boy. Basically, it doesn't come with any pre-installed games because that would be a piracy issue, but you can put them on to a micro SD card, you stick it in the portable, and you got your games right there, Game Boy, Game Boy Color, and I think NES it can play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like 40 bucks, and it's the new version because the old version, they had a bunch of really bad NES games installed on it, some of which didn't even work. And the best part was there was a slot for a micro SD card, but if you dropped a micro SD card in, it just fell into the plastic case. There's no input for a micro SD card.
Yeah.
No, nothing. There's not even like a holder for it. It just drops
Whoa.
In.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But okay. The new one is nice. Adafruit makes one called the Pi Girl, which is ran off of Raspberry Pi Zero. And I love Adafruit. And from what I've seen of it, people love it. And it seems like it would be really good. It runs a ton of different stuff, whatever you want, really, because it's a Raspberry Pi.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for the people who want to have something original and are nuts like me, I got a Game Boy.
Wow. So you mentioned a Raspberry Pi. So you, besides being a collector, you're also a maker. And I know you have a fourth tool for us. Do you want to describe what that is? And
yeah, absolutely. This is basically the world's greatest screwdriver kit ever invented. It's made by the people from iFixit,
mm-hmm.
Which is the main site for learning how to repair your iPhone, your computer, your Switch, whatever it may be, whatever tech device. It's got, I think, 60 bits, maybe, around there, I remember. It has a suction cup for taking the screen off of phones or whatever you would use with it. It's got
right, and just to interrupt you. This thing is called the iFixit Pro Tech Toolkit.
Yes,
and it's a kit of a bunch of tools that you're going to describe for us. What it is, but what it is it's a toolkit, iFixit toolkit.
Yeah. So you got like a classic screwdriver and a ton of bits to go with it for everything you could ever need. You've got an anti-static wristband, which you can hook up to something in case you're like taking apart a high voltage electronic. You've got spudgers. You've got these little guitar picks, which help you pry things apart. You've got tweezers. There's probably more stuff I'm forgetting, but yeah, those are the main things.
Yeah, and you can buy the full kit. You can also buy the tips, the screwdriver and tips set alone.
Yes,
which is itself an incredible tool because when we say bits. What we mean is all these very obscure bits that electronics device producers make often to hinder people from taking it apart, because they have a special bit that you need a special, or they have screws that have that require a special bit to engage. Yeah. And so these are all included.
To give an example of that, Nintendo and Apple use this thing called a tri-wing bit, which, you know, they make nowadays, but back in the day it wasn't very popular. It was kind of hard to get. But, I mean, they include three different sizes of it in this kit, and that's just, like, one of the types of bits. There's so much stuff.
Right. I have yet to encounter a screw that this kit has not been able to undo, and I actually use it not for repair, but when I'm taking apart stuff before I throw them away, if I have electronic garbage, I always take it apart for its parts, and just being able to take apart things, you need these little bits to take them apart because they have screws that are made to be very hard to find. And this kit has them all.
Yeah, it has everything you could need.
Yeah, I have the same kit, and I have used it to replace a trackpad in an old MacBook Air. It did a great job with all the specialized bits and everything. Yeah. Really good.
Yeah, I've used it to clean out Game Boys because it's got everything I need for that. I've used it to take apart like old Apple stuff that we're getting rid of just to see the insides and be like, oh, so that's what's in there. and it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah,
that's so cool.
Yeah, highly recommend it. So again, there's this the link that we'll have is for the entire kit that has all these auxiliary things, the tweezers and the pliers and the glass remover, and or you can also just get the bit set itself, which is again something worthwhile.
Right.
Yeah.
Lux, do you have any of those special magnetic mats that have kind of a grid so you can like drop the little screws and fasteners in order into squares so that when you put something back together you pick them up in reverse order?
Yeah, so this is genius on iFixit's part. What they did is in the kit, the lid for the screwdriver casing, if you flip it over, it's actually a mat with little sections
That's
for you
right.
to store your screws in.
I didn't know
I
that.
I forgot about
oh
that,
my
Alex.
Gosh.
You're right. And I can see a picture of it on the Amazon page. It's got it as kind of a concave, it's almost like a bowl. Then with a grid of raised, kind of ribbed squares that you could drop the parts in.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yep.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's great.
And that's not magnetic like the one that Mark was just talking about.
No, it's not. But, I mean, for them to include something like that, I think that's pretty awesome.
Is this one called the Magnetic Project Mat? Is that what it is?
No, Mark? It comes with the kit.
No, but this
oh, yeah, the other one
Mark
is helped. The Magnetic Project Mat.
Okay.
And it comes with like a dry erase marker. It's convenient. It's a good thing to have.
So the whole mat is magnetic and you just put your little screws down on it?
And they just cling on. And then, and then you use the dry erase marker to make
to mark what it is. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Oh,
yeah.
I see. Okay.
Those are good.
That's a great
And
idea.
They also, for the ProTech toolkit, it is a little expensive. It's $70, and I get that can be expensive for some people. So if, say, you can't afford, you know, the $70 price tag, they sell refurbished ones.
Mm.
And I believe those are a little bit cheaper.
That's really good.
Yeah.
And by the way, a lot of the refurbished stuff that comes across Amazon are actually just things that people have returned, because Amazon cannot actually resell them as new.
Yeah, they're just open box.
Even though they may be absolutely spanking new, but just returned. So in this case where there's no electronics or moving parts, it's a fantastic bargain if you can find one.
Yeah.
I do notice that Amazon has their own Amazon Basics version of that kit, and I'm wondering if you had any experience with that.
I have no experience with that. It might be good, I wouldn't know. I have some Amazon basic stuff like charging cables and batteries, and they're fine, but I mean, I'd really just get the real thing, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, iFixit stuff is high quality, and also if you go to the iFixit website, they have the best tutorials, videos, and PDFs for fixing all kinds of electronic stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Right.
They including, do like, including changing your phone screen.
Yeah, and they're so like dedicated. Like when a new iPhone model comes out, they actually send someone to Australia because it's released there first, you know, because of the time zone thing. And they take it apart in a hotel room in Australia and figure out how to do it. They're like the best.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
yeah.
So Lux, this has been so awesome talking to you. Really fun. Thanks so much for sharing all your cool tools with us.
Right. And, if people wanted to see some of your collections or what you're interested in, do you have like a blog or Instagram thing? Or
I have an Instagram. It's mr.boitastic. You can find me there. And I post stuff occasionally and you can see what I'm up to.
That sounds great. Oh, I remember what I was going to say is that Amazon, if you just do search Amazon Warehouse, you will go to their webpage that has tons of previously opened products. And I've shopped there before and everything on it is like, it's new basically. They just opened the box. Someone opened the box and then returned it.
And it's called Amazon Warehouse?
Yeah. And the best way to get to it is just do a Google search Amazon Warehouse and it'll take you right there.
Oh, wow. I can see it. Yeah, that's incredible. I love that.
Yeah. Check there first. All right. Well, cool. Lux, thank you so much. That was really great.
Yes, thank you.
Hey, everybody. It's your host, Mark, and I wanted to thank you for listening to the Cool Tools Show. And I also wanted to let you know that we've got a lot more going on at Cool Tools than just this podcast. We also have the Cool Tools website, which has a new tool review every day. And you can get there by going to cool-tools.org. We also have 4 different newsletters that you can subscribe to, and you can subscribe to those from the Cool Tools page. We have this podcast that you're listening to right now. We also have a YouTube channel where we review tools. Check that YouTube channel out by going to youtube.com/cooltools. And one of the things I'd like to ask you is if you're really enjoying everything that we are producing, go to our Patreon page and support us there. You can sign up and give us as little as $1 a month, and that would mean a lot to us. The money that we get from Patreon goes towards a lot of things. We transcribe our podcast interviews so that you can read them online. We pay for editing of our podcasts and for our videos. We pay our contributors. We have video production costs. We have equipment costs. We have hosting costs. And the money you give us through Patreon also goes to support Cool Tools Lab. Anything you give is a huge help. And one of the things that we do is if you are a contributor to Patreon, we'll give you a shout out on air. And so I have a few people here to thank this week. Mark Lyonaj, Micah Gates, Monty Zukowski, Patrick James McNally, Robert Cohen, Scott, Spence Lloyd, Steve Avery, Steve Golden, Steve Levine, Tom Hess, William Phillips, Aaron Nipper, Dharab Patel, Glenn Mercer, Jay Walker, Jeff Bonaire, Ryan Jarrell, Pat Daly, Patrick Kennedy, Troy Wallett, Mike Camerate, Nicole Harkin, Tim Youssef, Scott Reed. Thanks all of you for supporting Cool Tools. And if you would like to have a shout out, go over to the Patreon page and sign up. And thanks for listening to the Cool Tools Podcast. We'll see you next week.